Forest Avengers Follow the White Rabbit is a podcast dedicated to practical politics. Practical politics is, of course, called practical politics because it is all non-voting, which makes it very, very practical. Conventional politics is always rule-based politics, every 2 years, every 4 years. It's basically what you do at the voting booth. And then there is full-spectrum practical politics, or engaging and taking down an opponent by any means necessary, using the rules, but never breaking the rules. But to do anything, we have to start with practical politics, and in this case, it's the art of staying on message. It's having a consistent message. And our consistent message is the mantra, or white rabbit genocide, you see on this front page. And we will also, in this podcast, engage in the geopolitical. We will talk about geopolitical events. We will talk about things from a unique white rabbit perspective. We will also go into white rabbit psychology and ecology and talk about everything you'd want to know about the indigenous white rabbits of Europe. And this is, again, the Horus the Avengers Follow the White Rabbit. 6 o'clock, TV hour. Don't get caught in a foreign tower. Slash and burn. Return. Listen to yourself churn. Lock him in a uniform. And book burning. Bloodletting. Every motive escalate. Automotive incinerate. Light a candle. Light a motive. Step down. Step down. Watch a heel crush. Crush. Uh-oh. This means no fear. Cavalier. Renegade and steer clear. A tournament. A tournament. A tournament of lies. Offer me solutions. Offer me alternatives. And I decline. It's the end of the world as we know it. It's the end of the world as we know it. It's the end of the world as we know it. And I feel fine. How about that? Play some R.E.M. for you. It's the end of the world as we know it, and I feel fine. The world is getting a little hot, if you haven't noticed. Let's go over some news events. I'm going to do an extra long news special. We're going to do, we're going to talk about all kinds of stuff, and I'm going to talk about this war. And the dates are being set sometime in July, supposedly, from pretty good sources. I'm going to go into details. We're going into Russian details, all kinds of stuff. First off the bat, we're going to talk about this oil spill, which is huge. It's a huge oil spill. My goodness. No one even knows how big it is. It's so big. Scientists watch for environmental effects of Gulf oil spill. The Washington Post. Yeah, David Farenthold and Juliet Eelperin, staff writers there, pretty much Captain Obvious there. This is going to be an epic disaster. And it's pretty much that time on the calendar where disaster after disaster is going to unfold. It's funny that because it creates such a problem, reaction solution for the environmental groups on why they aren't making more hay of it. I saw one of the Sierra Foundation, Sierra Club, or whatever that group's called, the big environmental association that they're pretty much anti-white, pro-white genocide. But anyways, it's one of those big environmental foundations in America, Sierra Club, and they didn't, you would think they'd be jumping up and down and making hay over it, but they seem pretty benign. I mean, this is an epic disaster. No one even knows when it can be fixed. Bangkok, of course, is burning after Thai protest leaders arrested. Yahoo News, Associated Press. And I mean, Bangkok is just blowing up. There's several other places blowing up. Korea. Well, we'll get to that in the war segment. Korea has accused North Korea of downing a ship. That ship that got downed was a missile they fired. I expect the whole world to blow up. But anyways, Bangkok burns after Thai protest leaders arrested. Disaster happening across Asia. And of course, the GOP ran out the clock on Wall Street reform. It's an interesting story behind this, and this is from the Huffington Post. This may be a Wall Street Journal article. No, it's not. It's Ryan Grimm from Huffington Post. Let's go to some more. How the financial overhaul vote went down. This is the Wall Street Journal. And the Republicans stalled into the vote. One of the challenges is the Germans are sticking it to the Anglo-American bankers. And they're doing it in a variety of different clever ways. Basically, all these different financial overhauls have gone out of their way to hand Deutsche Bank massive amounts of business at the expense of Goldman Sachs. And we're going to come back to this point. Bloomberg, major crash likely if stocks break May 7th lows, Dow Watcher says. And that's famous Richard Russell, editor of Dow Theory Letters, says Bloomberg. Ah, Times Online. Mummy Merkel battered as Germans lose faith in the EU. The Germans are running their long-term strategy, and they're now starting to back out of the EU. They're playing their game. And they're playing it to a flute at a time on the planet where everything's coming apart anyways. And the Germans don't want to fit the bill for the EU. And the whole thing's going broke. It's a sham. Minister slams Deutsche Bank boss for Greece remarks. Ackerman basically said that, he said that they needed to basically have a mechanism to kick people out of the EU as far as the financial scheme, instead of doing a northern and southern euro, which would have worked because the northern Europeans with Germany would be much more aligned than the southern, and the southern could have been, you know, Spain, Italy, and Greece are basket cases, and they could have done something together, and that would have worked, but they didn't do that because certain parties made sure it wasn't going to work. Yeah, for the EU to work, it would have been the very bad for in the indigenous white rabbits of Europe. We're not interested in the EU working as it's designed today. Joseph Ackerman, who's Jewish, by the way. They got Jewish fronts all over the place in Western civilization. But his comments, dangerous for everyone and outrageous, Financial Times labeled it. It's comedy. Everyone's downing Greece. Debt aid package for Europe took nudge from Washington. Washington was terrified that the Germans were going to let the whole thing go on. And the Germans stalled and did all kinds of interesting stuff. The Germans were basically were ticked off that they didn't get, that the Russian corporation wasn't allowed to buy Opel from GM. Some of the Anglo-American bankers halted that. It's no big deal. There's some people around Obama, like the Jew rabbits, who didn't want that to go through. The only thing they can do is try to get in the way and try to hurt Russia's feelings over something like that. But of course, the Germans are now sticking it right, left, and center. They don't really care about what most people think they care about. They're going for a long-term plan here. And that shows in that the Germans wanted to ban, short selling in EU debt. One of the most successful banning of short sellings happened in the Asia crisis of 1998. Shortly thereafter, the Hong Kong exchange banned short selling of the Hang Seng futures. The challenge with banning short sale, there wasn't such a big challenge there because the market's not huge, and the Chinese stock market had not really been wide open to foreign investors. Only certain shares were open, and there were like A and B shares, and the B shares were open to overseas investors, but the A shares weren't. It's kind of a semi-closed market. And so the whole thing worked quite well. But when you start talking European Union debt, it's a huge, huge debt market. So banning short selling is almost impossible, and they're trying to figure out why the Germans are doing that. Well, they're sabotaging the thing. And they still haven't figured out. There was a huge sabotage that happened, or certain parties believed that it was financial terrorism that caused that huge that Dow collapse of 1,000 points. They called it a fat finger error. A fat finger error is when someone hits the wrong order. And that happened in Chicago. The next thing you know, the whole entire stock market went down. Other parties are putting together a different scenario. I don't know the whole truth, but it's very easy to hack into some of this stuff, some of these computers, and just send a message very clearly that we can get in and we can drop your markets. And putting in massive sell orders in the S&P 500 futures and the Chicago Mercantile Exchange over in Chicago would do it, too. this is going to get wild, even more wild. It gets more wild by the hour. But the Germans are playing their game. ECB watch. ECB to issue term deposits to sterilize bond buys. What they're doing is sterilizing. This is another thing, too. The Germans are demanding sterilization. Sterilization means that when the Germans are walking in to provide liquidity, it's not going to be inflationary. They're not printing any money. They're automatically sterilizing it by immediately buying the same amount in long-term debt. so you're not going to have a bunch of inflation. You might remember that some of the emerging markets had outrageous inflation. They allowed all these capital inflows, they allowed all this extra money into the economy without sterilizing it by buying the equivalent number of bonds. And that's what it's called, sterilization. So they're running their game. Merkel's coalition, this is a May 4th piece. And this has been updated several times by Bloomberg. Merkel's coalition calls for EU orderly defaults. They're breaking the EU. The Germans have basically sucked elements of the EU dry simply because no one can compete with their manufacturing. And now that they've done that, they're running their long-term strategy. And this is, and believe it or not, the Italians, elements of Spain, elements of Greece will all be involved in it. They, you know, this whole entire private central banking scheme on this planet, the whole entire scheme based on conflict and scarcity is coming to a close. It's coming to a close right in front of everyone's face. And most old timers didn't think you'd be old enough to live to see it. But this thing is just collapsing. It's cavitating. Euro rescue package just buys time, says Merkel. Well, they're you see, they're doing all these contradictory statements, and everything they're doing, it just adds more instability to the matter. There's no amount of money that can save it, though. And Washington's had to pony up money even to get them to do anything. But we'll see how it all pans out. But same old, same old. And you know, on one end they talk about doing something with the rescue package. On the other end, you know, they say, you know, it's a waste of time, and the Germans are demanding the Deutschmark back. Let's move on to China. The famous investor Mark Faber. Mark Faber is friends with Jimmy Rogers and the Soros and everything else. China may crash definitely in the next 9 to 12 months. Well, they're already starting to crash. But you know, these they're not exactly known for their timing, some of these fundamental guys. They're all into fundamentals, they're long-term, but the whole entire planet's crashing. And that's Bloomberg. China may crash in the next 9 to 12 months by famous investor Mark Faber. And of course, going over to China, we have why they may crash. This is from The Sun. This is a little light news here. Chef dies after feeling ill. Instead of feeling ill, feeling eel is pretty funny. A chef has died after an eel was put up his bum. Shocked doctors in Sichuan, China, found the sea creature in the 59-year-old man's rectum after his death has been reported. The 50-centimeter-long Asian swamp eel, ouch, was allegedly inserted into the unnamed rabbit's bottom after he passed out drunk by pals playing a prank on him. Medics said the eel had devoured his bowels. Man, that's ruthless stuff. That's from The Sun. Yeah, get you some lighthearted news there. Don't go drinking too much in China, because if you it'd be like one of those fraternity pranks. Instead of drawing something on your face while you're drunk, like they do in America, they'll stick an eel up your bum. How about that? German prosecutors investigating Google. Yeah, it's open season. It's open season on all kinds of stuff connected to this one crew now. And Google is, of course, corrected to the crew. Berlin prosecutors are investigating Google. This could be a big deal. On suspicion of violating privacy laws by recording fragments of people's online activities through unsecured Wi-Fi networks. Hamburg prosecutor Wilhelm Mollers told the news agency DAPD that his office launched an investigation after a complaint was filed against undisclosed Google employees over the incident last Friday. This is very recent, Wednesday, May 19th. This could be an interesting case, because Google has now acknowledged the privacy breach in an apology. The U.S. internet giant has come under fire from authorities across Europe. Yeah, they're just attacking anything. Anything associated with the Anglo elite, they're attacking. Now let's come over to America and let's talk about epic financial crisis. This is from a pretty good piece from The Final Call. It's a black Muslim news site, finalcall.com. Unable to pay their bills, states, towns, cities, and villages scramble to stay afloat. This is not a news item that is getting the kind of attention it should, because they don't want everyone to know about it. And this was a piece by, I don't know how, is Charlene Muhammad. Yeah, national correspondent for the Final Call. That's Reverend Farrakhan. But it's a pretty good piece about budget cuts bring pain and relief isn't in sight. All the cities in America, just like everywhere else in the world, are going belly up. They have all these huge pensions. In America, a lot of times you'll have a police officer, and I know some of them. They can take their best 3 years, their best 3 years salary, and average it together, and then they'll retire at that amount. So their last 3 years, they work a lot of overtime. Next thing you know, they retire. Instead of retiring at 50 grand a year, which is still a lot of money for retirement, they retire at 80 grand a year. In places like San Diego, you got all the city employees that do that too, and the whole entire thing is coming crashing down. It should have been planned better. Even if the country were all white, we would have had problems with some of this stuff, some of this public, too many public employees. Not so much the cops per se, but this type of system that can be easily abused, and you can't blame them for abusing it. They can't raise taxes high enough to do anything with this. Mortgage delinquencies drag on economic recovery. This is Yahoo Finance, Washington AP. Mortgage delinquencies drag on economic recovery. Mortgage delinquencies are huge again. They're massive. This is interesting. I mentioned Goldman Sachs before. Goldman Sachs got called onto the carpet in Washington. And typically when a financial firm like that gets called onto the carpet in Washington, they're going to slap them on their hands, they're going to go back, and that's part of the game. The problem with Goldman Sachs now is Goldman Sachs, there's some groups that have it in for Goldman Sachs that you don't want it to have it in for you. And Goldman Sachs is having certain prosecutors who are known to hate certain other sides of the equation. The sides of the equation that I don't like are considering criminal charges against Goldman Sachs. Now, do I think it would happen? Normally, I'd say not a chance in hell. However, with everything else going on, they very well may bring criminal charges. And let's go on with this. Jail time for Wall Street crime. Senate considers it. They're talking about Goldman Sachs security fraud. And this is Deal Book, the New York Times, their business section. And this is dicey stuff. And there's no telling when it's going to end, but it looks like we're going to be at war sometime in July, they say. They say it has to be July, and I'll go into that in the next segment, but they're building up everything into this, all this crazy stuff going on. Now let's skip over to something a little lighthearted. All the new Nazi specials are on. Yeah, we got Nazi specials. Let's see here. Jewlicious. The Jewlicious 100% kosher blog. Vampire Nazis who are also zombies. Are we ever going to get over our obsession with Nazis? What about zombies, vampires? Okay, so at first blush you might want to pass on this video because it seems patently ludicrous. But ask yourself this, are Nazi zombies worse than just plain zombies? And if Nazi zombies start attacking Jewish zombies, what would you do? What would you do? These and other deep philosophical questions are discussed in VNWAAZ. Discussed but never answered, because it seems we will never get enough of the Nazis and the zombies. Sigh. And this is 17 comments. It's on Jewlicious. Jewlicious is a young Jewish site. It's a funny video, actually, but it's typical. They love the Nazis. Those Jews love the Nazis. Nazi zombies. The Sun-Times had one of the funniest pieces. Nazis bid to steal Shroud. Adolf Hitler wanted to steal the Turin Shroud because his interest in the cult, among is revealed. The Nazi tyrant was said to be obsessed with the sheet, which is said to have been wrapped around the body of Christ. That's the Sun Times. Oh, my. Oh, my, oh, my. Let's see here. Pat Buchanan, too many Jews on the Supreme Court. Oh, look out. Look out, Pat. That's funny stuff. It's funny stuff. But let's go over to the latest Nazi special. The Science Channel. The Science Channel. I watched this one in high definition. Had probably one of the best shows ever of Nazi high-tech weaponry and all the different bases and what was going on there. When it comes to their conventional weaponry, the show started and it was surreal. And of course, out of my 500 channels, apparently I have a high-definition science channel. It's part of the National Geographic network or something along those lines. But it started surreal. The Nazis had won and totally annihilated New York. and Hitler was walking the streets of annihilated New York, and there's all these little blonde kids with blue eyes zig-hailing him, and as he was giving his big victory speech in Washington. And all I remember is the Statue of Liberty wearing a giant red Nazi swastika sash. It was like nothing you've ever seen. And they were talking about how far the Nazis were advanced on the atomic bomb. It was very interesting. One of the better pieces I've ever seen, and they just get better with time. National Geographic has been accused of late of putting out Nazi propaganda. Go figure. And, of course, on the other Nazi front, one of the most entertaining pieces I've seen was on Spike TV. Yeah, Deadliest Warrior. They have a Deadliest Warriors series where they match up famous warriors from history or famous groups from history. I remember seeing, I think it was the PLO go against the Irish IRA, and they do these battle knockoffs based on their weapons and based on computer simulations given the variables. And it's a pretty interesting show, but they did Deadliest Warrior that I happened to catch with the Nazi SS, the Waffen SS versus the Viet Cong. And guess who won? Viet Cong? No. The Gook Rabbits got smoked. The Waffen won. And it was a fascinating show. Yeah, different parties are starting to catch up. They're shoving this Nazi stuff right, left, and center. And the winning scene was the Nazis hitting the Waffen officer grabbing his big tank of accelerant, and pretty much just blazing the little Asian rabbit, the little Southeast Asian rabbit with fire, one of those big flamethrower tanks that those Nazis had, and it was ruthless stuff to watch, but fascinating nonetheless. Catch that Deadliest Warrior and watch the Waffen win. Go to town. And here's one of the funniest things I've seen in a long time. The ADL site, Anti-Defamation League site, that's ADL.org. Most racialists know this. Anti-Semitic display at Polish soccer match must not go unpunished. May 14th update. Polish police detained 5 fans suspected of displaying the anti-Semitic banners, charging 2 of them with the law banning public incitement against ethnic or religious groups. The country's soccer federation also penalized the soccer club. This is the funniest thing. There's a picture, too, of a huge sign at a soccer stadium. We're talking about a big soccer stadium, and this picture takes up one whole section of the stadium from top to bottom. And it has this big Jew rabbit with this huge Jew rabbit beaker nose. And a red circle around him and a red line going through him. And this is what it said. Fans of Rezovia Rezao displayed a large banner showing a caricature hook-nosed Jew with a blue and white yarmulke, the colors of the opposing team, and the phrase, "Death to the crooked noses." We call the league's president to sanction them. It's comedy. It's kind of an equal important measure of how authorities react to such incidents. It is funny stuff. The sign is just as big. The sign takes up the whole stadium. Someone did a lot of time, put a lot of time and effort in that. Funny stuff. Let's go on to immigration reform. Immigration, of course, is heating up in Arizona. Arizona is the front. What has happened is we've hit the infamous gates of Vienna. My listeners know about that. There comes a point when white rabbits hit the gates of Vienna, and then it starts getting interesting. The little speckly brown rabbits from Mexico are used to hitting that bell like Pavlov's rabbits, and then the white rabbits come and give them carrots. Well, now they're hitting the bell, and they're not getting anything but a bunch of hissing white rabbits who are going to make it illegal to be brown pretty soon if they get a chance. And this is getting feisty. Oh, they're getting feisty, feisty, feisty. And, you know, Obama's fatal flinch on immigration reform. Dana Milbank, May 2nd, Washington Post. And they're pouring on this, and they got the Mexican president, and they don't know what to do. They don't know what to do because the candidates want to get elected, and you can't get elected running pro-immigration. It's just impossible. And of course, immigration on the southern border of the United States and Mexico has been horrendous since all my life, probably, and then some. It's been there's been racialists on the border before I was born telling them it's a disaster, and it is a disaster. They don't really know what to do with the white rabbits anymore because they've hit the gates of Vienna. They inhabit it no more. Then it becomes funny. then it becomes funny. They don't do anything except sit and hiss and get more upset. And apparently someone's seen our sign. Someone's seen the Follow the White Rabbit stuff down in Arizona. It wasn't us, but it's probably someone. If you guys ever see anything like that, snap a picture on your little cell phone and send it. Send it. It'll get to us. Send it to the email. Put it on Facebook or something along those lines. And there won't be a Facebook link on our website. However, there will always be a Facebook. So you can look for us on Facebook. We're there. Facebook went through a huge bunch of scandals with the Jews and the Arabs having each other's Facebooks taken off. And somehow we got caught up in that. And someone said we put up a David Duke video or something and then got banned. I don't know, but they haven't banned our latest one. So, the fans say that there's gonna be one for us whether they like it or not, and they'll keep putting them up no matter how many they ban them. But I'm not gonna put a link there because it's too easy to take it down. It's too easy, it was, up until they did a bunch of new security procedures, too easy to hack into Facebooks and everything else. But that's a side note. And there's a new film coming out called Machete, Evokes Race War. And a lot of Mexicans, believe it or not, are afraid of this. Because what's happened is they've hit the gates of Vienna. It's not time for a movie like this. Unless you're a white rabbit. And the film Machete, I haven't seen it, don't know everything about it, but the Alex Jones are talking about they're stoking ethnic conflict. Oh, it's a little late. And they're stoking, all they're doing now is getting white rabbits at the point where they're really ticked off. They've been stoking ethnic conflict for decades. You should see what it's like near an inner city in some places of America. I mean, they're stoking ethnic conflict now. They're stoking race war. Well, where have you been, Alex? Yeah, Alex Jones did a new video. It's on Newsnet 14. It's very good. You should watch Alex Jones' video, and he's right. All the Hispanic producers of the movie are very afraid. Lindsay Lohan's in it. I'll have to see it. I bet it's pretty funny, actually. But, you know, white rabbits, what it'll make the Mexicans look like is savage wild animals. White rabbits do not view media like anyone thinks they do, and they can turn on a dime. Yes, they can turn on a dime. And now that they've hit the gates of Vienna, they're going to keep pushing. They're not going to get anywhere. Things like this are precisely what you want. You know, it's not like Roots in the 70s where Roots came out and you know, all the indigenous white rabbits of Europe sitting in America felt, oh, so bad for the black rabbits. That propaganda has wore off and has wore off post-2009. It's just falling down. That propaganda isn't working anymore about feeling bad for the black rabbits. None of this stuff is working anymore. And then it becomes comedy to watch. And who knows what will be the results of it. But the Hispanics, believe it or not, the Mexicans, they got all these groups all bent out of shape. And true information won't mean anything to them, right? They think they've been wrong. They think they deserve something just for being Mexican. And most of them actually want to take the place of the black rabbits because the black rabbits have been, they've been given everything. But there's no money there for them, and the whole place is broke, and it's going down, and now they keep pushing with this stuff. So it should be fascinating to watch this whole scenario spin out of control. But the movie is supposed to be pretty wild. It's got Mexicans running around hacking up white people with machetes. It's kind of like the, actually it's probably even a more grisly than the Inglourious Basterds with the Jews, but that's not what you want around white rabbits. White rabbits aren't going to find that type of thing funny. Especially when a lot of Americans have family members or know people that have been attacked by either illegal immigrants or something non-white. It doesn't go over that well. It gets old. And of course it's about time, isn't it? Yeah, you sit there and wail on them and wail on them. The next thing you know, centuries later, you get Braveheart and you lose your country. Or you lose Scotland. You know, that's the way this stuff works. Why does it work like that? Because race is real. That's why. But it is funny when they start hitting the gates of Vienna and all the right rabbits do is just keep their hissing at them. Hiss louder and louder. And now's the time, of course, to be on a consistent message. Which is our job. Which is the only job you can have legally right now. But that's a good video if you want to watch Alex Jones' panic reaction about how this evokes a race war. I don't think it actually does, per se. What it does is it makes Mexicans look like savage animals, from what I've seen of it. But that's how white rabbits instinctively see things. They're going to go from, You know, thinking Mexicans are little pets, the Mexicans are savage animals. You know, it's kind of like Inglourious Basterds in a way. That's what it seems like to me, but you won't know until it comes out. And moving right along, I'm going to take a break and I'll be back with you. I'm going to go over more news reports about Russia and we're going to get war prepped. We're going to get the big war prep. We're going to talk about the flaws in the Patriot missile battery that have come out across Pakistan. And they're putting out flaws in our Patriot system, advertising it apparently on Pakistani blogs. And we'll talk about this. And we'll talk about, I'm going to answer a brief question in Q&A in the end from the previous piece that thing's been proofed so many times. Before you guys even hear it, I already got questions, some things to go over about it. And what else am I going to talk about in the rest of the show? I'm going to do a mini piece on the British National Party. And I'll be back with you. I did a update for the, about the British National Party election in the next piece, and this was done shortly after the election. One of the things Americans have going for us is that in America, in this part of the Anglosphere, America, the United Kingdom, and Australia, of course, make up Anglosphere. But in this part of Anglosphere, that would be America. We got a lot of negative conditioning fast, right after World War II, and a lot of social experimentation that did not come later into Britain, because Britain didn't have any minorities there, or majorities who choose to live with them as minorities. They didn't have any black rabbits back in the 50s and the 60s. They didn't get them till late. So most of the social engineering started in America and then was moved to the UK, and at the same time it was moved to UK, it started working its way into Australia. But in America, we basically went full circle. America also has the advantage of we mostly came here and conquered the place. In the United Kingdom, they were already on their islands, and they went out and conquered the world. But that will come full circle. I just think it's going to come full circle to them a little bit later after America drops, which is happening right now. They're already starting to come out of negative conditioning in Britain because they've dumped so much stuff in there that it's in their face. In America, even in the 60s and the 70s and the 80s, we already had a legacy of either oppressing black rabbits, and that's what they did. I mean, that's what slavery is. I'm opposed to low-cost labor, but it is basically oppressing them, you know, taking them and forcing them to work for nothing. Of course, they treated them like prized cattle most of the time, but I'm opposed to any of that low-cost labor. But when it comes to Indians, they were slaughtered. So America has that legacy, and it's come full circle. Now Americans are tired of hearing them complain. They don't care about it anymore, and Americans mean white rabbits. In the UK, they haven't come full circle on saying, okay, we conquered the world. Get over it. Let's kick these out of our country. America's at a little later stage, and I think that's because of World War II. The social engineering got started here very quickly. They had a little bit more to work with. You had the blacks who were already here, and you had white rabbits. Oh, black rabbits, I feel guilty. And you had the Indians already slaughtered, and of course, the Americans were like, oh, Indians, I feel so guilty. Colonialism in Britain came once they imported all the people. Once they imported all the people, they said, well, you colonialize the world, now you got to take them in. You know, and it started slowly in the 60s and the 70s. But in America, I had a little bit head start, so I expect America to come out of its demoralization, to have come out of its demoralized state a little bit quicker than Britain. So the election doesn't bother me. In fact, I see some of the good signs of it as how much money and energy the other side spent in trying to make sure the BNP lost seats or something along those lines. America, of course, is a political wild card always because it's winner-take-all. In the UK, you've got to have an organization like the British National Party in their particular electoral scheme, and you've got to have a grassroots. In America, they already have the grassroots. We just don't have the top of anything, and it is winner-take-all in that regard. If you had the top of something in America and you had the grassroots, you would automatically end up in a perpetual semi-dictatorship, kind of like Russia, where Putin can do whatever he wants to do because they ain't voting him out. Medvedev, they're not getting voted out ever. They can switch back and forth indefinitely. You could do some funny stuff in America because they have the grassroots. But America's kind of like that. We're in Britain, you have a system that is democratic is a little more democratic, and you've got to have a build a base so when that does revolt does happen, they can be swept into power. But at least you got to be active under the current system. And so in this next piece, I go over the British National Party and what they what's going on there, and what shocked me is how much money and how much time and energy they spent trying to defeat the British National Party. It doesn't really make any sense unless you're panicked or something. But I'll go into that in the next piece. Since my first show, I've made it very clear that there was a group of Anglo elites in a lot of trouble that are very, very desperate, that are have lots of problems, and those problems just mount. They've been mounting, believe it or not, since the late 90s, and there could be a variety of different reasons for that. In the previous episodes, I went into some of the more surreal reasons. That could be as real as a heart attack if they mean anything for us one morning. But for right now, what you see is what you get, is they have a lot of problems. The problems keep mounting. They mount and they mount and they mount. And what we see in the London elections, in the United Kingdom elections, is an act of outright desperation on their behalf. This election has been called a third world election. It has been called outright a sham. In not all of it, but many elements of it. And they have spent a fortune behind the scenes, in front of the scenes, trying to basically keep the British National Party from growing. They didn't really succeed from keeping it from growing, but they did succeed in taking back a few council seats, whoop-de-doo, and taking back, making sure they didn't get a seat in the big house. That is a lot of work over some little party, and it is outright ridiculous. But when you're afraid for your life, when you have the problems they have, it leads to this type of outrageous reaction. The idea that they would get so concerned, so upset, that they would go to that distance over the little British National Party, it should tell you something. The people in London are outright terrified. And they're going out of their way to harass and harangue. But I've always been of the opinion that Anglosphere is over with. America's not necessarily over with. It could split up. America has a long tradition. We're not immigrants. We're conquerors. Believe it or not, yeah, your American cousins are not immigrants. We are conquerors. We came here and owned the place outright through outright violence. No other way. We killed the Indians, brought the Africans here to slaves, and could go to war against anything, anywhere, anytime right now with our weapon systems, if we choose to. Yeah, we have that tradition. We're the only country in the world that has a gigantic statue up pointing back to the place we came from before we conquered it. We came from Europe and we conquered the place. You can say what you want to. You can hate yourself for that because, oh, I'm an evil white person and I'm an evil white rabbit and I went and conquered other rabbits. Well, big deal. It's true. You're not taking anything away from the Indians by telling the truth. I'm not saying they don't deserve to live. I'm just giving a fact. We didn't migrate to America. We came and took the place. And we came by and large from the British Isles and France, and then, of course, a bunch of others joined in. But in the British Isles, they don't really have that tradition in their blood. The tradition in their heads is that they're evil colonialists and they've done all these sins and they got to destroy everything. And they went a long distance. Prior to the 1960s, this wasn't really a problem because they didn't have big immigrant populations. In America, we have a long tradition of killing Indians. We have a long tradition of pretty much a handful of white rabbits in the South holding down millions of black rabbits permanently in perpetual slavery. It's a pretty amazing feat, actually. We have that tradition, for better or worse, which means, obviously, if you come from the gene pool of conquerors from the British Isles, you might have a likelihood of conquering again. That's why they get so afraid of America. And I don't see anything happen in the British Isles big time until something big happens in America, which could happen any day. Depending on the elements of the Anglo elites that don't necessarily agree with elements in London. But they went all out to try to smash the BNP. They didn't really succeed. Their share of the vote is up. But now they will start causing problems within the party. They will have, problem, reaction, solution. They will be creating problems within the party. They will have all their agent provocateurs in place to try to cause problems in the party to get rid of Nick Griffin to kill the thing. I don't know what they're accomplishing. You have a German, Russian, Italian axis. You don't have a New World Order. You don't. And they're listening to me right now. You don't. You're in trouble. Everyone knows you're in trouble. The Chinese know you're in trouble. The Japanese know you're in trouble. you're in trouble. I don't know what you're going to do, but that's why you crazy pink rabbits are so dangerous, because you don't have a way out. You don't have a way out. There's no way out. In any other century, Putin would probably come in there, declare himself king, and put the whole entire royal family to the sword, clean out the place, and ask anyone else if they want it. And say, that's what was done to the Tsar, and I'm going to do the same to them. You know what? Maybe he has a point. I don't know. But, you know, most of Europe's shaping up and waking up. Gene pool-wise, you know, you have all kinds of problems there. Nothing that they couldn't get rid of fast. Let's face it, but when you start talking the United Kingdom and the British Isles, they are mentally fried. They've been under a consistent, heavy-duty demoralization, and they have a virtual police state. And so what happened was the liberals and the so-called conservatives and all these groups, they basically stole many of the BNP's issues. The British National Party had most of their issues stolen. Their issues on the economy were stolen. Far and wide, you don't have to listen to me. Do your own homework. Don't listen to Nick Griffin on it. Actually, do your own homework. Look at their issues and look at all the issues that were stolen by these different groups. The immigrant issue was stolen, but they can't live up to it. See, that's the problem long term. They can't live up to it. So the only thing they could do is try to sabotage the BNP. And they basically, the election has been called a third world election. It looks like a bunch of fraud. And it's pretty easy to steal an election. They can't mess with percentages of the vote when that starts rising, and British National Party got a historic percentage of the vote in many of the places. But they can fool around in a few different areas, especially if you got the liberals now on an anti-immigrant message and you got all these different groups on anti-immigrant messages, or basically a sound immigration policy all of a sudden. So how it ends up is anyone's guess, but under any other century, the United Kingdom would go down. Permanently, the groups running Anglosphere that aren't allied with the German-Russian axis would probably be burnt at the stake. Period. Because they haven't just tried to wipe you out. Yeah, the little English rabbits. They haven't just tried to wipe you out. They tried to wipe out Putin's family. Literally, that's the way he looks at it. Which is good. At least someone has your back. So I'm not worried about us not having a home. I'm worried about what these crazy fools do that are in so much trouble they don't have a way out. What do you do when you don't have a way out? Fight? Well, can they fight? You think they could fight on the streets of America? They'd be chewed alive. These perfume generals would be chewed alive that work for them. By other generals, by lieutenant colonels that are ticked off. Who knows? So this would be pretty crazy, and I'll be interested to see what they've negotiated for themselves, because last fall they negotiated something. Yeah, you little pink rabbits have been sold out. It's just how ugly it's going to be. When the other side gets its foot in the door and gets the actual upper hand across the globe, and in a way that the whole planet can notice, it's going to be outright ugly. But what they did to the British National Party is, it doesn't make any sense unless you understand that they're in a lot of trouble. And you would think they'd give them a couple seats and start moderating things and let them work their way in, because the British National Party aren't exactly talking about Sieg Heiling and marching up and down the street doing the German high step, and they're not exactly talking about ethnically cleansing Wales or anything. I mean, it's just really ridiculous. You would think they would give them a seat or two and take the starch out of it. You would think the Republicans would try to work into, in America, try to work into, and there are groups that are trying, but try to work into more of a pro-European perspective. In other words, let these white kids have some space. Let the white rabbits have some space. However, they made a line in the sand. There's no way going back when you make a line in the sand. You know, old Bob Whitaker has said that he's made it clear that the Anglo-American elites, especially the Anglo elites as a whole group, that everyone's had it with them. And when everyone's had it with you, that's the way it goes. And their own gene pools have had it with them. Their game on this planet is up. Their banking schemes are up. They're over with. They're done. It's not if, it's when. It should be fascinating to watch. But the BNP, what happened in the United Kingdom election in a lot of these areas, not every single area, but a lot of these areas, doesn't make any sense at all unless you understand that someone is outright panicking. When you spend that kind of money to try to worry about them getting a seat or trying to worry about taking a few council seats away, well, you seriously are you're in panic mode. And they've been in panic mode since late 90s. And we will stay tuned to this event. But the British National Party should not get upset. They should do the work in front of them. By all means, you have a consistent message to be on it. But there's nothing to be upset over. Your enemy's outright terrified. Why they would be so terrified? Well, there's a lot of different speculation over that. In some of the previous ones, I went into speculation that likes of which no one's ever put on MP3. Well, that's my job. But your job right now, if sitting at home in the United Kingdom, is to be on a consistent message, because that's the only thing you can do legally. Anything else is illegal. Being a white rabbit is illegal, but for some reason, you know, they can't do anything about the mantra. They just can't do anything about that. They'd like to, but they can't. But, well, stay tuned to this one. Hey, you. Yeah, you. We see you shopping at the local Whoop-De-Doo Mart, listening to Horace the Avenger on your BlackBerry. You downloaded me just before you went and are listening to me on speakerphone, driving all the other customers crazy. You might want to head back down to aisle 7, though, because that electric blue hot rod you plan on painting your toenails, those big swastikas on your toenails, well, you might want to go back and get that infamous color, because pretty soon we could be back in black. You never know with all these news events. So turn that speakerphone down a little bit, because I wouldn't want to accidentally tell them in the local industrial park, you know, 7.5 feet underneath their new landscaping, you have, who knows what you have buried. Those AK-49s and those grenade missiles. But we've got some wild news events turning up, and some has just happened over the last 24 hours. The Washington passed some type of financial bailout since the last time I was talking to you just a few minutes ago. I did these separated over a few days. And they financed some type of financial reform. They passed some type of financial reform in Washington, but what I don't know everything about it because it's like 5,000 pages long. But they banned certain types of proprietary trading at banks. And that is what the Germans wanted, to move all the business over to the Deutsche Bank. The Anglo bankers are getting killed from the inside out. I don't know fully what's going on, but the trend doesn't look good for Anglo banking. Whatever Germany does, the euro, as we know it, is dead. And they keep talking about the euro and Germans banning short selling, and people are trying to figure out what the Germans are going for. They're going for their long-term plan. They had some funny stuff on the news front in America. Krugman put out a report in the, I think it's in the New York Times, where economic contraction begets right-wing extremism. No kidding. No kidding, Mr. Krugman. The Occidental Dissent wrote a funny piece about it. Tribesman Paul Krugman short shrifts his Harvard homie Benjamin Friedman in favor of a couple of Germans. Funny stuff. Let's see here. Let's go on to Kagan. Yes, the Taliban appointed a white Jewish woman. And it's got some backlash. Yes. Well, she's opposed to the Second Amendment. Kagan on Second Amendment, quote, like freedom of speech, enjoys strong but not unlimited protection. Oh, Captain Obvious here. Kagan was not sympathetic as a law clerk to gun rights argument, Bloomberg.com. Yeah, she doesn't like free speech. James Edwards at the Political Cesspool on the Political Cesspool blog as how many Christians are on Israel's Supreme Court? It's times like this, these things get attention. It's not the type of attention you want if you're Jews. This stuff is not good for the Jews. Patrick Buchanan, too many Jews on the Supreme Court, Huffington Post. He did write a pretty much, Pat's going off over the line on that stuff. It's pretty funny. That was on the Huffington Post. Jason Lincoln's right. Pat Buchanan, too many Jews on the Supreme Court. But this is funny. It's like, the more obvious, the better, as I always say. Stick their noses in it. Let's see what we can do for the steely-eyed lone wolfers that are listening to me, especially the females listening to me as they spray paint their AK-49s that dark purple cloud camo pattern, that new famous camo pattern they use for. It's supposed to be top of the line for urban warfare. That's what they say. Coming up, they're going from pink to the purples. That nice dark color, nice dark blues and all that type of thing. You know, purple is like blue with some red in it or something like that. And that's what you want for urban warfare as they listen to Horace the Avenger. What can we talk about here? Oh yes, a cruise missile in a shipping box on sale to rogue bidders. I'm going to get back to this piece in a minute because we're not on Russia yet, but that one just popped into my head. I got all these news pieces in front of me. Yeah, the Russians have a cruise missile in a shipping box. It looks like a shipping container. You know, have you ever seen a shipping container on like a semi truck? You know, you drive around your semi truck with a big container on the back. Well, shipping containers kind of like that, except a crane can grab it and put it onto a boat or put it back onto another semi or do anything you want. It's a big shipping container. This shipping container turns up and launches cruise missiles. It's a perfect weapon. Oh, you gotta love these Russians. They just don't quit. But we'll get to that in a minute. But before I go to some more, more breaking news. Pink Hitler protests provoke fury. Giant posters of Hitler dressed in pink with a love heart in place of a swastika have provoked a furious debate in Italy. This is funny stuff. It doesn't end. It's an 18-foot tall poster with Hitler in pink. It's crazy stuff. He's got the German cross, and instead of the swastika, he has a big red heart, and he's painted. He's wearing a pink uniform. It's comedy. Oh, let's see here. On the German front, before we go into war news, we got some interesting stuff. On the German front, the Germans are digging around in the Caribbean, and the scientists find sunken islands in the Caribbean. They're talking about all this part of the planet that was sunken, put underneath water. And there's a lot of smoke behind this, advanced civilization going down and that type of thing. And this is in the local Germany's news in English. Scientists find sunken islands in the Caribbean. That's, you know, scientists are always finding something, but the German scientists usually do things with a motive or something. Someone has a long-term motivation. So it should be interesting to see what all they did find down there in the Caribbean. And of course, to the bad side, some bad news for the multi-cults, as I call them. I don't call them multiculturalists or multi-cults because it's a cult. This is the Soros Foundation, the infamous Open Society Foundation by our enemy, the Pink Rabbit Bankster and Elitester himself, George Soros. Mixed picture for Berlin's Muslims. Yes, this is a Soros.org initiative. A mixed picture for Berlin's Muslims. Kreuzberg District lauded for social inclusion efforts, but persistent discrimination cited as top concern for Muslims in Brazil, in Berlin. My advice for the Muslims is run, rabbit, run! Run! Get on out of there. I wouldn't want to be in Germany. That's for sure, unless I was white. I don't even know if I'd want to be there if I were at a tan. But that's a Soros org. Discrimination persists against Muslims in Europe, especially Berlin. Go figure. But now on a brighter side, a scientist has put me onto something. There's a website called colormatters.com. And they did if you look up our black and white colors, you'll go to, if you Google that or Yahoo that, you'll go to colormatters.com. That's color, colormatters. And they're talking about different elements of light and light-holding colors. And the question is, are black and white colors? The answer to this question is one of the most debated issues about color. Ask a scientist and you'll get the physics reply. Black is not a color. White is a color. Ask an artist or a child with crayons and you'll get black is a color, white is not a color. Maybe. There are four sections on this. But what's interesting is what science says. And science and the additive color theory, color as light, the answer is black is the absence of color under physics. When there is no light, everything is black. Test this out by going in a photographic dark room. There's no photons of light. In other words, there are no photons of colors. White is the blending of all the colors and is a color. Light appears colorless or white. Sunlight is white light that is composed of all the colors of the spectrum. A rainbow is proof. You can see the colors of the sunlight except when the atmospheric conditions bend the light rays and create a rainbow. You can also use a prism to demonstrate this. The fact, the sum of all colors of light add up to white. This is the additive color theory. And it goes on and talks about some fascinating different things. But black generally is a rejection of all light, and white is the blending of all the primary colors of red, blue, red, green, and blue, the primary colors of light. Fascinating stuff. Fascinating stuff. But scientists pass that around because we were talking about light and how everything is manifests itself. And this is that's something I never knew. Black is not considered a color because it's the absence of light. Interesting. We may conclude that ourselves someday too. So now we will go on to the war special. All you guys are waiting for my war special, and things are boiling over on this planet. We have the Russians putting cruise missiles in a shipping box and releasing it to the press on late April, April 25th. Defense experts are warning of a new danger of ballistic weapons proliferation after a Russian company started marketing a cruise missile that can be launched from a shipping container. The Club K missile attack system could prove a game-changing in fighting wars with small countries. Well, yeah, Iran and Venezuela are already showing an interest. They just don't quit. Oh, and they're a wonderful value at only a few million or 10 million each. Each container is fitted with four cruise anti-ship or land attack missiles. The system represents an affordable strategic level weapon. They just don't give up, do they? They don't give up. That's just funny stuff. Funny stuff. And we'll do a brief over. South Korea, a ship was sunk by the North Koreans, and the North Koreans, let's go over some news events on this one. We'll talk about North Korea briefly, and then we'll go into Russia, and then I'll end it with some war updates. The war has probably already started. Most certainly the battlefield is being shaped, and the battlefield is all over the globe, if you haven't noticed. But this is an intel-type update. More and more intel is coming across our desk to indicate the South Korean warship that was recently sunk with a heavy loss of life was a victim of a North Korean torpedo. Some of this intel tells us that this was a German-made torpedo, but bought and fired by a North Korean ship. It was not a mine, we are told. Naturally, there are threats going back and forth, not to mention the harsh letters, threats, and even more harsh letters, and all the other empty rhetoric going back and forth. Nobody will do anything, and the 46 South Korean sailors who died in the incident will soon be forgotten. Well, maybe not. Well, a nation saber rattle. This particular individual writing for this little intelligence-type update doesn't think there could be war over there. Well, there could be. There could be. How South Korean ship was sunk? Well, it was sunk by North Korea. Let's see. This is BBC. Let's see. South Korea to officially blame North Korea for March torpedo attack on ship. That was back in March. Yeah, this is. They just recently came out that they were responsible for it. And that's the Washington Post. Okay, I didn't get the facts straight here. North Korea warns of war if punished for ship sinking. Tensions deepened Tuesday on Korean Peninsula. South Korea accused North Korea of firing a torpedo that sank a naval warship, killing 46 sailors in the country's worst military disaster since the Korean War. President Lee Myung-bak vowed stern action for the provocation following release of long-awaited results from a multinational investigation into the March 26 sinking near the Korea's tense wartime maritime border. North Korea, reacting swiftly, called the results a fabrication. If South Korean's enemies try to deal any retaliation or punishment, or if they try sanctions or strike on us, we will answer this with all-out war. And that's from Colonel Park In-ho of North Korea's Navy told broadcasters. And this is on My Way. My Way, the title is MyWay.com, App News. North Korea warns of war if punished for ship sinking. And Clinton warns North Korea lauds Japan alliance. Hillary strongly condemning North Korea for killing, downing a ship with a missile, which is of course that's what you're going to do in the international relations. It's not good to go around sinking ships. Bad little North Koreans. Bad. But you know, what can you do? I guess you could start a war over it. We'll see if it blows up over there. You never know. That could be first to go. Now on to Iran. Well, the prelude to Iran. We'll talk about Iran a little Russian. Iran, and events are moving so fast they're hard to keep up with. They'll probably change. If you're listening to this a week from now, something will be changed, but the trend emerges. There's going to be a war with Iran. And Russia and old Pooty Pooch caused us some problems here in the last post-1998. It's kind of obvious. Iran, U.S. should be punished for nuclear threats. And that's on May 3rd. Iran is pretty tip top, you know, saying they're going to cut Israel's legs off and everything else. But let's go over to and we'll talk about some of the different Russian machinations. The Tehran Times, that's Tehran Times, Tehran Times. They love Putin. West acquiesces as Russia wins back ex-Soviet states. This is a May 8th piece, and it's a glowing piece about Putin. Vladimir Putin has long bemoaned the fall of the Soviet Union. Now he appears to be having some success in winning parts back. He talks about everything going on in Central Asia and how he's dominating the spectrum. And then, of course, we have the piece that I couldn't even keep a composure over talking about, a cruise missile and a shipping box on sale to rogue bidders. And that came out April 25th on the Telegraph, telegraph.co.uk, and you can look it up, Russian cruise missile and a shipping box. It's funny stuff. It's okay. It's just pooty-poot. You're getting on my nerves, so I'm just going to sell a shipping containers full of cruise missiles to all the rogue nations of the world. It's kind of funny and tragic at the same time. Let's see. Russia warns. This is Yahoo News posting for Reuters. Russia warns U.S. against unilateral Iran sanctions. Basically, the U.S., it will go it alone, and Israel probably started or do something crazy. I'll talk about that in the next segment on actual different pontifications about when the war may begin. Israel disappointed over Russia-Hamas meeting. CNN World. Israel expressed deep disappointment Thursday over a meeting the Russian president had this week in Syria with exiled Hamas leader Khaled Mashal. Israel's foreign ministry said in a statement that it expected Russia to stand by Israel in its struggle against Hamas. Hamas is a terror organization. Israel has always stood by Russia in its struggle against Chechnya terrorism. Oh, come on. That's funny. We expect the same attitude. And they're pouting and crying. This is Ynet News, ynetnews.com, and this is Jew News, Jew Rabbit News. Russia moving closer to Hezbollah, too. Experts analyze Russia's connection to radical Islam, say it's all much part of a bigger plan. Russian President Dmitry Medvedev to visit Syria this week and met with Hamas Politburo Khaled Mashal. On Wednesday, he even stated that Hamas should be included in the Middle East peace process, despite Israel's firm stand against the Islamist movement. Well, what can Israel do? Nothing. And is Russia taking a pro-Islamic side in one of the most explosive regions of the world? A former Israeli ambassador to Russia explains that Moscow is seeking to increase its involvement and hold in the region. Terror organizations, it doesn't really matter to them. Russia doesn't view it as taking sides. That's too harsh. It's taking the middle. It wants to assume the role of Middle East mediator. Mediator, says former ambassador Magan. I don't know how to pronounce this Hebrew's name, this Jew rabbit's name. It believes it already has us. We are ready to talk, and now the question is, who will bring others? The Russians seek to do it before the Americans, and the Russian needs a Syrian in both parts of the Palestinian, including Hamas. And the Russians, they believe we have no reason to be angry, an expert on Russians' policy from one of the Israeli universities Department of General History says Russia was the first of the major world powers to recognize Hamas. The line was continued during this visit and will be continued in the future. Russia is not interested in real war in the region, but is interested in strengthening its status through strengthening its ties with Hamas. What this will do, when I go into the war section, it's going to force Israel to move and to move soon, because the U.S. has to surrender Iraqi airspace back to Iraq in the beginning of August, sometime in August. That should tell you something. So if the Jews, the Jew rabbits, if the Israeli rabbits don't want to ask a Muslim country before they fly in and try to bomb Iran, they have to go before August. We're going to go into this, but Russia is playing all sides of the fence. They're the head of the spear out there dancing, and they're pretty much not too much a biased negotiator. But if someone seems to do business at all with Arabs or Muslims, or treat them fairly at all, or even see that there's two sides of this equation, they're considered anti-Israel. Of course, Nazis are going to kill 6 million Jews. And Russia signs arms deal with Syria. This is Haaretz, HAARETZ.com. Russia signs arms deal with Syria. And, of course, they signed an arms deal, and they say Syria is being supplied with warplanes, anti-tank weapons, and air defense systems. Is this good for Israel? No, No, this is not. And they're screaming bloody murder over it. They have no leverage over Putin. No one does. No one in Anglosphere has leverage over Putin. No one does, except the Germans. Yeah, he's out there acting. He's the front. He's the head of the spear for German soft power. That's his job. His job is to get that done. The Germans can't be seen doing stuff like that. Putin does it. And that's Putin's job, and he has been driving them crazy since he pounded their New World Order and just keeps pounding it. Will this drive them into acting? We'll get into that one in the next broad speech, small piece, in the next piece about war. I don't know how small it's going to be. But this piece is kind of funny. It's in the bulletin, .us. The Russians are coming, to Damascus. And it talks about this big meeting and them selling Syria weapons and same old, same old. But in Russia, they executed, Somali pirates, and there was a bunch of yelling over racism. You know that the Somalia, they have a big problem with pirates, and Russia, of course, they took the ship back and got a little rough with them, and they were crying racism. And I think it was a big, fraud on the news end. I don't think Russia roughed them up too bad, but they were saying Russia executed all the Somali pirates. And the Russians said the direct opposite, and the Somali government said they had it coming. It was a funny piece, but it made Putin look good in their press. He's a strong man over there. And let's see, Putin welcomes gift of leopard from Iran. Yeah, Putin welcomes gift leopard from Iran. Iran gave him a leopard. This guy gets all kinds of free animals. Putin. But, you know, that's what he is. He's a big head of state, and he doesn't do anything, but everyone around him does stuff, and he's seen as a strong man to hold together. Well, he's a little more active than I give him credit for, but he's not as solo as many of the others think. Not anywhere close. And the interesting piece on the Russian-German axis was by and a blogger by the name of Matt Rodina, and he writes for Pravda. That's MATRODINA, and he is a blog. Matt, MAT, I guess it's a Matt / Rodina, RODINA .blogspot.com, and it's the owner is Stanislav Mishin. And that's Stanislav Mishin. But he writes some interesting stuff in a piece, The Politics of Victory Day, talking about that big victory. The big victory parade over in Russia with a huge, huge military parade and all the different international participants. Five interesting things occurred. I will list them from least to most important. No one from Georgia. That is this major surprise. Not that that is a major surprise after all. Shakashvili, the butcher of women, children, and eater of silk ties, is a war criminal. Besides, the sock puppet of the Anglos is too busy blowing up monuments to Georgians who died fighting the Great Patriotic War. No Brown. Chuck this up to the elections. They're talking about Gordon Brown of UK. That the leftist sad sack of bones will be retired to the political boneyard. Gordon Brown, even though his soldiers were marching, their band was playing, and even though he's still prime minister, could not have been bothered. After all, running a 12.6% deficit takes a lot of effort, not to mention pandering to his dominatrix, Obama. Three, Israelis were there. Let's face it, with Russia being their second biggest trade partner, the Russians as their main tourists, and our Orthodox Church being the biggest landowner. Most of you didn't know that. One of the largest landowners in Israel is the Orthodox Church. While Obama treats Jews the way his mullahs taught him to, the Jews are finally waking up to where the sun is shining, and it's not in the far west. During the photo shoot with Medvedev, Perez stood to our president's right, a very clear signal where Israeli politics and loyalties are heading. They've read the Quran, and they are finally figuring out what they are dealing with in D.C. Of course, let me interject here. The Israelis don't have a choice. They have to bow to Russia. And no matter what Russia does to them, no matter how much they fund Syria or Hezbollah, they can't do anything, so they have to bow to them, because without the Russians, Israel wouldn't exist. Without German soft power, Israel doesn't exist. And it should be fascinating to watch this opening when this war happens. But most people didn't know. I don't know how much property in Israel the Orthodox Church owns, but it's a big number. It's a big number as far as non-Jews owning property in Israel. It's they're one of the only ones, I guess, or something along those lines. Obama was not there. Number four, how could he be? He was too busy running the world. His attempt to send a second run, talking buffoon of a vice president, Vice Biden, a man who sucks up to petty war criminal like Saakashvili, this is obviously a Russian nationalist writing this blog, was rejected out of hand. While world leaders were gathering to celebrate a key turning point in the history of mankind, the destruction of the worst evil, yes, much worse than a dozen or so million Stalin killed in 30 years, the 40 million Hitler killed, 9. The American emperor was busy speaking in Hampton University in Hampton, Virginia, and he wonders why no one respects him. Why should they? The U.S. soldiers who, for the first time ever, were marching in the Red Square must have felt real pride, knowing that the man who would be all too happy to send them off to become meat could not be bothered to show up and see this historic event, and only offered up the last minute the comic relief of a vice president. Mr. Obama, we apologize to you. Of course, we here in Russia, we celebrate with parades, military victories of great sacrifice, and he goes on and on. I am sure that if we are as enlightened as you Westerners and had parades, that is your gay pride parade, you would have no problems attending. Yeah, and he talked about Stalin's killing being worse than Hitler. I don't necessarily agree with that, but it's another story for another day with these Russian nationalists. Some of these Russian nationalists, or maybe that's the standard line over there he has to put into his blog to not get a visit from Putin's guardsmen, I don't know. Number 5, now we come to the most interesting, most important part of the parade. That is the inclusion of and the role played by Angela Merkel, Chancellor of Germany. That is correct, another first. The Chancellor of Germany was present, but not just present. During the ceremony, the parade, she sat to the left of Putin, right next to him. During the photo shoot and laying of the floors at the unknown soldier's grave, it was Merkel at Medvedev's right. Not even with the leaders of France, Israel, Italy, or any of the other former Soviet republics was that close. What does that mean? Well, we can pretty much rule out blind chance. So if not blind chance, then this is rather purposeful. This is the point that the Anglos start ripping their hair out as the German-Russian alliance is forming again at breakneck speeds. This was an alliance the British split prior to World War I, destabilizing Europe and helping create the disaster it was the 20th century. The Germans see the sun is rising in the east and setting in the west, and they are not about to go down the Anglo boat, and Merkel has already been personally backstabbed by the American godling, something she will never forget. France, Italy, and even Poland will follow through, even Latvia and Estonia, whose politics are widely anti-Russian and neo-Nazi inspired, were there. This time, however, there will be no split. We know the Anglo game all too well, so go on, Obama, Brown, and just stay busy sucking up to all your Saudi betters and not worry about how the world really turns. Happy Victory Day. God bless our veterans, and may they continue to visit these parades for decades to come. He's talking about all the events with Germany and Russia there at the parade. It was a very big deal. And, of course, when he talked about Obama stabbing them in the back, he's talking about the people behind Obama and that Opel deal that the Germans were ticked off over. But, you know, that's the way this stuff works. And now we're going to go on to the war special. I'm going to continue this into the war special. When it comes to the basics of the system we're in, nothing is more evident when it comes to nuclear power. If any third world country wants nuclear power plants, it becomes a very dicey proposition. Russia has been running around helping them put up nuclear power plants, and we know that the Iran plant is going to go online any time. So they say, if it's not online already. But why do third world countries want nuclear power? And why do the classic Bilderberger or the Anglo-American elites not want them to have it? Well, it comes down to conflict and scarcity. You know, it's always been thought that the key to helping third world countries come out of their backward state is cheap electricity, and nuclear power generates pretty cheap electricity. In fact, in France, it generates all kinds of electricity cheap and in abundant supplies. And in theory, if they have cheap and abundant electricity, they would gradually become independent of U.S. foreign aid. You know, these countries need other sources of energy to survive. And nuclear power is a great alternative. That's why China's busy trying to develop nuclear power plants instead of all their coal plants, which are very inefficient. And, of course, U.S. foreign aid keeps them in servitude, and they can't really assert their sovereignty. And it's one big chain reaction with the, more control of the country's natural resources then gets surrendered to the IMF, which, of course, leads to less freedom and independence for the people. It's one big chain reaction. And their New World Order was always based on this concept of conflict and scarcity. You create scarcity and you control the conflict. and you control the planet. It's very flawed. You have all the different elements of that from Kissinger's famous, we're going to create lots of little wars so we don't have a big war. Well, they created so many little wars, now they got a big war. But it is over this type of mindset. It's not our mindset. It's a pink rabbit mindset. But they want to, containing nuclear power plants, they always approach it as they're worried about neutron bombs. There is some concern over that, like if you're a Jew rabbit in Israel right now, there's concern over that. But their concern is that their whole entire world government scheme, based on conflict and scarcity, is basically folding, is basically coming to an end. And there are two pieces there are two issues. One is cheap energy. Everyone wants this nuclear power. They want to buy nuclear power plants from Russia. And in reality, the Anglo elites, their version of the New World Order, the Bilderbergers, can't stop them from buying them from Russia because they can't do anything with Russia, unless you want to kill yourself in the process. So this has come to a head under Iran. And it is all over basically cheap power. Forget about the nuclear weapons. That's not their biggest concern. Their biggest concern is their whole entire global scheme. And there is a piece, the piece that ended up on Prison Planet, I think it was sent to me. It was called Trilateral Commission Wants War with Iran. And it's a pretty good piece. The problem is that the Trilateral Commission member, Mikhail Slobodovichy, is chief advisor to Russian leadership. This guy doesn't exist, according to all my sources. Other than that, the piece is kind of funny. But the piece is a piece where... I don't know what to say about it, but this guy either they misspelled his name or there's something up with him. He doesn't actually exist, but many of the things they talk about does. I don't know if he gave a wrong name or something else, but I'll read this to you. Provided a revealing insight in the plans of the global elite during the group's recent meeting in Dublin, Ireland, and this is the Bilderberg meeting. This was May 14th. This was published. He mistakenly told a We Are Change Ireland activist he thought was a fellow Trilateral Commission member that the globalists are planning war with Iran. Yes, they are. According to Jim Tucker's fascinating report on the story, and this, of course, was on Prison Planet, and the author is Paul Joseph Watson, as Trilateral Commission wants war with Iran, but it has some interesting points in it. So even if they got some of their facts wrong, they got some facts correctly. We Are Change Ireland's Alan Keenan that the Trilateralists and their Bilderberg counterparts are intent on exploiting the economic crisis to finalize plans for world government, but that this agenda is being severely hampered by so-called quote-unquote nationalists and are becoming increasingly aware of the impact that global government will have on the freedoms and standard of livings. And there's a variety of different types of nationalists referring to. He's talking about these tribal movements happening all over the world. We're deciding the future of the world, Slobodovichy told Keenan. We need a world government, he said, but referring to Iran, we need to get rid of them. Suddenly, I'll call him Slobo, because pronouncing his name is impossible. It's not an actual name. Notice that Keenan's name tag was different than the Trilateral Commission label and said, I can't talk. We operate under Chatham House rules. Slobo's position on Iran is both alarming and surprising in equal measure. Not to my listeners. Given that Russia has been generally supportive of Iran's right to develop peaceful nuclear fuel program and has directed helpful build reactors. Well, that's because he's not really... I'll interject here. If the guy that wrote this article would have done his homework, he'd find out that this guy is not really... There's no such guy, and the Russians generally don't participate... unless they're defectors in trilateral commissions, and they certainly don't participate in the Bilderbergers, although they know everything going on. There are defectors from Russia that work for the Anglo elites, and they go to all such things. The Russians know everything going on there, but, I mean, it's just, these guys should do their homework on their sources. But some of the stuff he says is true. Tucker also reveals that trilateralists are crestfallen at how their plans for global government and centralization power are being so fiercely resisted. It gets worse every year, not better, says one. Why do we even bother to meet anymore? We can't simply give up and quit, another responded. Bilderberg expects us to have a plan outlined. The fact that the elite had planned to have their world government fully operational by 2000 and our 10 years overdue has been much the cause for concern among trilateralists, report Tucker. The Trilaterals Commission boys are upset that they were unable to exploit the economic crisis they helped generate by creating a World Treasury Department under the UN. They blame rising nationalism and ask, how can these people know about this? The continuing collapse of the euro threatens to derail the entire march towards global governance. And then they go on to say a couple other trivial things. So some of his facts are right, but some of his facts are wrong. But the basic premise that the global governance elite, especially the Trilaterals Commission and the elite side of the Anglo started side of the equation, the non-Russian German Axis side of the equation, are seeing everything collapse, but they've been going through this for the past 10 years, accelerating. They would have had this together long, long ago. I don't know if this is a planet piece. I don't know what this piece is. It's one of you guys sent me off Prison Planet. It has some facts in it and some things that aren't true. Some of these different names that, you know, don't exist. The idea that they would put Russia in there and the Russia's talking about having to go to war, some Russian advisor or something. He's not an advisor to anybody. Yeah, he's not, the idea that a chief advisor to Russian leadership would be at a trilateral commission other than to give some speech on his opinion, and usually those are done in public, like they do over at that big business meeting over in Switzerland or something. You know, they have one of these big meetings every year in Switzerland and in Europe, and the Russians show up and give a speech, but that is they don't go to trilateral commission type stuff normally, unless they're a defector. But anyway, some of the points he made were very, very good, in so much that they would have this set up years and years ago. I don't know what the objective of the piece was, but then again, most of these conspiracy guys, they don't check all their facts and sources necessarily before putting something out. And this is, of course, on Alex Jones's website, and you never know about old Alex other than not to be trusted. Or I don't trust them. But another big problem for the global elites has been Israel. And the title of this piece on Front Page Mag says everything. This is a recent piece, and you've seen millions of these. Tutu's Crusade Against Israel. And Desmond Tutu, of course, is true information won't mean anything to Desmond Tutu. Everything's racism all the time. You could take him out and beat him to death, he'll say the same thing. No real different than your self-hating white rabbit neighbor. But he's gone mentally, and he compares Israel to Nazi Germany. True information won't mean anything to him. And this is a very important piece because it'll tell you what's going on in the third world. Sigmund Freud thought Israel would lead the third world against the Aryans. Well, what's happened is the third world has been led against Israel. Over this type of thing that usually the Jews push on others, you know, those evil white racists. But now Israel's sitting there, and Israel's the apartheid state. They don't know what to do with it. They're out of their, you know, having their own country and letting the world observe them. They are out of their element. They don't know how to handle it. They don't know how to fight this, and there is no way to fight it. But, you know, they usually play the outsider, leading the outsiders like Desmond Tutu against the evil whites. Well, now they're the evil whites. That's really what Desmond did. You know, it's not really attack. Desmond Tutu doesn't see them as Jewish. He doesn't understand that. That's the very abstract. I don't even understand Judaism. You know, it can be pretty abstract. But he does see them as white people oppressing brown people. They view stuff in that type of spectrum. But it's a great example of what's happened. The third world has been led against Israel. And generally the Russian-German axis and what's going on in Europe is sitting back and has watched this and encouraged it behind the scenes. Encouraged all these nations of concern, as they're called, as these leaders are rail against Israel. They don't say it, they just do it. And of course, it has caused a problem. It has caused a problem for the Anglo elite because their whole entire New World Order is based on white rabbit genocide. And so now you have these white rabbits in Israel that are supposed to be historically have done no harm, and they're evil. Evil Europeans have persecuted them, and now they're the ones persecuting all the brown people. All these contradictions come out. And brown people, black people, the black rabbits, like Tutu, they see it, and once they see it, they can't stop. they can't stop. Once, like, the South American leaders talk about Israel nonstop, they can't stop. The brown people, once they see this, they can't stop. And it has caused a huge problem for Israel. They can't move. And, of course, you have another piece, Israel, a sin against God. And this is on a neocon online magazine called frontpagemag.com. It's just an online website. It's a website, sort of like a website magazine, I guess is what I call it. Webzine, they're called. Israel, a sin against God. It talks about all these liberal leftist churches talking about how racist Israel is. And they pretty much are. They're very discriminatory. But that has been their biggest problem, is this these contradictions. They can't, it's just impossible. Most of the world's not interested in white rabbit genocide, per se. You know, they're starting to realize the only problem the world has is these Jews, according to them. But it's been very inverse from what you'd think that would work. What's worked on the Jews is very inverse. Putting them in the center of the planet and letting them do whatever they want and not being able to criticize them because you're guilty of the Holocaust has worked out the direct way you think it worked out. It's totally 180 from the way the Jews thought it would work out. It's just been devastating. And of course, they're the whole entire front package for the Anglo elite. They're always running around doing the dirty work. They're running around killing the czars. It's their job. It's what you got to do. They're all in that crew. But it's been disastrous. It's just falling to pieces. And they're heading for total disaster. Charles Krautheimer, op-ed columnist for the Washington Post, The Fruits of Weakness, May 21st, 2010, and you'll get all the frustration by reading this piece. And that's in the Washington Post, The Fruits of Weakness by Charles Krauthammer. What a name, Krauthammer. And he just rails against Obama. Rails against Obama. They watch America acquiesce to Russians reasserting their sway over Eastern Europe. They watch our appeasement of Syria, Iran's agent in Arab Levant. They've observed the administration's gratuitous slap at Britain over the Falklands. This is not just an American decline, this is American retreat, accepting, ratifying, declaring its decline, and inviting rising powers to fill the vacuum. Nor is this retreat by inadvertence. This is a retreat by design, and indeed on principle. It's the perfect fulfillment of Obama's adopted third world narrative of American misdeeds, disrespect, and domination from which he has come to redeem us and the world. Hence his foundational declaration at the UN General Assembly last September that no one nation can or should try to dominate another one. Guess who's been the dominant nation for the last two decades? America. And his dismissal of any world order that elevates one nation or group of people over another. NATO, the West. Given Obama's policies and principles, Turkey and Brazil are acting rationally. Krauthammer was upset at the beginning of this piece over Turkey and Brazil getting together and with Ahmadinejad, that he couldn't believe that. He couldn't believe that. Why not give cover to Ahmadinejad and his nuclear ambitions as the new U.S. retreats in the face of Iran, China, Russia, and Venezuela? Why not hedge your bets? There is nothing to fear from Obama and everything to gain by ingratiating yourself with America's rising adversaries. After all, they actually believe in helping one's friends and punishing one's enemies. And it's a great piece to read because it reveals all the neocon frustrations. Considering supposedly the Jews own Obama and everything else, It's kind of interesting piece. But of course, in the end, there's a lot of unknowns with the Taliban, other than he's pushing the dagger into America in a way that's visible to everybody. The dagger's been in America since 1965. It tried to make itself non-American, you know, tried to make itself a third world country, and he's basically just shoving it in everyone's face. But Charles Krautheimer is someone that that has seen this coming along or saw it coming ahead of time. That's why they were so pro McCain. So did the Rothschilds. You know, everyone says Obama's this guy's agent, Obama's that guy's agent. What's interesting is none of these guys ever talk about German soft power, but they all know about it. They all know who's behind Russia. They all know because if they talk about German soft power, they got to talk about other things that make them very uncomfortable. And that's another story for another day about what Germany did in World War II, what Germany did coming out of World War II. Let's see here. Iran. This is one of the interesting. The Jerusalem Post on This was on April 30th. Iran will cut off Israel's legs. A strong country that is ready to confront any threat. And said Iran will back Syria with all its means and strength. This was about, there's been threats going back and forth between the U.S., Iran, and Syria for quite some time. Let's see. Israel says Hezbollah missile buildup accelerating. This is Yahoo's News. This is a AFP, Associated Press. Israel says Hezbollah missile buildup accelerating. There are shipments of long-range missiles have been reported recently are only the tip of iceberg. Foreign Affairs and Defense Committee, Badats. Syria has a significant role in the growing strength of Hezbollah's rocket armor arsenal. Gee, you think? Weapons are sent to Hezbollah from Syria on a regular basis under the direction of Syrian and Iranian regimes. Gee, you think? They're preparing for all kinds of nonsense there. I've talked about it before. No one knows how many missiles they have there. I've seen 50,000 as a good estimate, and I've seen others like the Russian intelligence agencies and different ones predicting 300,000. It's just no one knows. No one knows till the thing goes up. And who knows where it'll start. It may start in Pakistan. It may start in North Korea. It may start, Israel may bomb them, and within 72 hours, the whole world will be up in flames. It will be wild, wild stuff. And this will prelude everything. We're going to see everything all at once, I guess. I've been asked if I think they're going to shut down markets. It wouldn't surprise me. If it happens like I've heard this thing's going to happen, then I wouldn't be surprised if they shut down everything. And then I'm going to answer some more direct questions in the conspiracy part. I got to answer some questions from a conspiracy rabbit about something from Fall the White Rabbit 42, but I expect a lot to go on afterwards. How much goes on, I don't know. When the war starts, I don't know. But we'll get to a timetable for war. And of course, Israel is primed for war with Iran, Netanyahu deputy. And of course, Israel is as always, extremely arrogant, at least talking a lot. This capability can be used on war in Gaza for a war in the face of rockets from Lebanon. There is no doubt that the technological capabilities which improved in recent years have improved range and aerial refueling capabilities. They're talking about making flights. This is a Reuters piece. Israel primed for war with Iran. You'll see tons of these coming out. I mean, dozens and dozens of these reports. Official endorsing efforts by the UN Security Council, powers to step up sanctions against Tehran. There may be sanctions, but they're not going to be any big deal. I can't even keep up with anymore because of the trends in place and the trends toward war. There was, in his address to the Fisher Institute for Air and Space Strategic Studies, Yalon said Israel was in a proxy war with Iran due to sponsorship of Lebanon's Hezbollah guerrillas and the Palestinian Islamic Movement, Hamas. There is no doubt, looking at the overall situation, that we are already in a military confrontation with Iran. Iran is the main motivator of those attacking us. And in some ways, he's right. A Timetable for War by Philip Giraldi. Philip Giraldi, and it is antiwar.com. And it is a good piece because many of the things he's highlighting in this are things I'm hearing coming from all directions and all channels about war in July. And he goes on in the piece to talk about the relationship we have with, that the Israeli government has sold a, pardon me, has sold the existential threat fiction, and it does want war, but its options are limited. And I'll read here. It knows it can only do temporary damage to Iran and wants the U.S. to do the heavy lifting. That will require contriving a situation that will bring about the U.S. entry in the conflict. Otherwise, an Israeli attack will only have limited value, possibly slowing down Iran's nuclear program, but not stopping it, while also guaranteeing that the mullahs will make the political decision to develop a weapon. Third, Washington has no real ability to put pressure on Israel, as the White House has already made clear that it will not cut aid to Tel Aviv and will continue to use its veto to protect Israel in international forums like the United Nations. Fourth, once the shooting begins, even if Israel starts it, both Congress and the media will demand that Washington intervene to support the brave little democracy. Pardon me. One can be sure that that on the day after Tel Aviv starts a conflict, Congress will be overwhelmingly pass a motion approving Israeli action and also calling on the White House to have an American forces join in. The Washington Post, Fox News, New York Times will be beside themselves with joy. Putting all these four premises together, what does it mean? It means that Israel will seek to start a conflict with Iran and pull the United States in. It will ignore any U.S. calls for restraint and will attack the mullahs with or without a pretext. Whether or not Iran remains in the nuclear non-proliferation treaty regime, which I believe it will, or whether or not the Tehran does anything aggressive. In the lead-in to such an attack, Israel will intensify its propaganda efforts and is quite prepared to lie to make a case against Iran and its friends in the Middle East region. The recent total fabrication of a case that Syria had given Scud missiles to Hezbollah is a case in point. Israel sees everyone in the region as an enemy, or a potential enemy, and it works very hard to make Washington see things the same way. Once the fighting starts, Washington will inevitably be drawn in, with Congress and the mainstream media cheering the process. So let us assume that Israel will attack Iran. After all, it is a win-win situation for them, in that they will demonstrate once again to the Muslim world that they are not to be trifled with, and will leave the serious fight in the United States. I believe they will attack Iran by the shortest route, which is over Iraqi airspace. Iraqi airspace is controlled by the United States Air Force, which would undoubtedly be under orders not to shoot down Israeli planes, lest Obama find himself facing a furious AIPAC, Congress, and press immediately thereafter. A shoot-down order is just not possible, given congressional Democrats' fear of how Jewish political donors would react, not to mention the danger that the usual voices of the media would turn against the Obama administration on the eve of midterm elections. Unless the Iranians were to react in extremely restrained fashion, they would consider the U.S. complicit in this attack due to the passage over Iraq, and the retaliation would bring Washington into the war, which is precisely what Israel expects to happen. The only joker in the deck for Israel is the possible unintended consequences if the war were to go badly, with Iran, for example, using Chinese-supplied cruise missiles to sink a U.S. aircraft carrier. The role of Israel in starting the conflict might well be challenged by many in the U.S., that even the media and Congress would have to take notice, but Israel probably considers that a remote possibility given the huge military advantage that the United States enjoys over Iran, so they likely believe it to be worth risk worth taking. Also, one must consider that the hard-right Israeli government of Prime Minister Bibi Netanyahu is not necessarily a rational player that will weigh up all the pluses and minuses. Netanyahu is driven by racism, intellectual arrogance, and a belief that he can control events in the United States, all of which will be part of his decision-making. And I'll interject here. This will be a disaster. Watch. Which leads to the question of timing. There has been some talk in the media that Israel will likely do something by November. Why that date is being selected is not completely clear, but I do believe it will be sooner than that, and this is why. As noted above, the United States controls Iraqi airspace currently, but that control will be ceded to the Iraqi government in August, when the U.S. presence in Iraq is due to be reduced to a garrison non-combatant level of 60,000 soldiers and airmen. At that point, the U.S. Air Force will no longer have autonomous authority to engage in Iraqi airspace, but the Iraqi government will be empowered to request U.S. assistance to do so. Imagine for a moment what it would do to U.S. credibility in the Arab world if Baghdad were to ask the U.S. to help defend its airspace against an Israeli incursion, and the U.S. were to refuse to do so. So I think the Israelis will make their move before August. They want to entangle the United States into fighting on their behalf, and they will not necessarily want to humiliate Obama while doing so. So what can Obama do to stop this? There has been some speculation that he might send a private emissary to Israeli Prime Minister Bibi Netanyahu with the message that the United States does not support an Israeli attack and that Washington will both denounce the action and not back Tel Aviv. I believe that Obama has already told Netanyahu, both privately and through diplomatic channels, that the U.S. opposes military action, but that the Israeli government no doubt regards such warning as toothless, particularly as both Joe Biden and Hillary Clinton have asserted that Israel has a right to make its own security decisions. Any move to punish or pressure Israelis would be blocked by Congress, so the Obama warning can be brushed off. The only option I believe would actually work is for Obama to go public preemptively on the issue and proclaim that there is no casus belli with Iran, and that any Israel attack will not be supported by the United States, and furthermore, the United States will take the lead in condemning such an attack in the United Nations and all appropriate international fora. Is this likely to happen? I think not, and that's precisely the reason why I think a new war in the Middle East is inevitable and will take place this year, probably by August. I'm hearing so many different people talk about July. So the trend is toward war. And many, many of the different parties, the different background noise is going toward war in July. I sit neither here nor there on an exact date. If I had an exact date, obviously I'd give it. But I don't. I just watch the trend, and the trend is toward war. It's been this way for quite a while. And after that, I will look to see what's going on. How wild it gets, I don't know, other than it should be huge. And there's just a news piece coming out just this minute about the Iran sanctions. The Iran sanctions, there's a loophole in it that allows Russia to deliver the S-300 systems. And Charles Krauthammer came on Fox News and said that would immediately cause a war. But you get the picture. You can't keep up with all the different little machinations. There's literally a dozen different sophisticated weapon systems, like the new giant bunker buster that Boeing's supposed to have ready by July 2010. They're supposed to deliver 10 of them, at least 4 out of the 10. There's all these new little bombs that they're going to have, some kind of new mini nuke or something, all by July. It's a shocking number, all revolving around this month, July, for some reason. And we will, and I'll talk about it again in future episodes, and we'll keep this going until they blow up until they start this process. This big process, this war, and we'll see what happens right afterwards, but I would expect big, big surprises. How big? I don't know. I don't know. We don't know the past, so I don't really, you know, I can't really predict the future other than the current trends. But what happens right afterwards or how big it gets, well, we won't miss it, that's for sure. That's for sure. But in the next piece, I'm going to go over some small number of Q&As from Follow the White Rabbit 42, which was proofed by several different proofing parties. And I'll be back with you on that here in a second. As an add-on to the 43, to this Follow the White Rabbit 43 news special, I'm going to do some question and answers in regards to 42. It's just a brief overview of a movie, Avatar, which played on the theme of removing consciousness from the body. And I'm going to talk about some different questions I had from the people that proofed it. Follow the White Rabbit 42 was the most difficult one I've ever done because I'm kind of out of my element. I'm answering direct questions on what I would expect to see about some pretty wild stuff. At the same time, I don't get in the business of predicting white rabbit behavior. It's very impossible. It's next to impossible to do for the obvious reasons. If you have a rabbit that'll build a plane and jump out of it, if you have a rabbit that'll resurrect something and try to use it as a beacon, you can't predict that type of rabbit's behavior or what they can do. I mean, we don't even know what they have done, other than you can't kill these Nazis. Not even if you want to. But before I do that, before I go into the movie Avatar and answer some of these brief questions from all the different proofers, I had it proofed by several different parties because it was a difficult one to do. You know, when you're out of your element, things become very, very difficult. At least putting it on MP3 and putting on the net, you know. But hopefully 42 answered enough of the questions I got asked about the direction this was going and some of the people that have it figured out based on Dr. Farrell's books, which is kind of like a how-to guide. But a how-to guide that needs another how-to guide on how to understand all the stuff he's talking about. But I keep this type of thing simple. But there's been an event that just happened basically in the last 24 hours. And it's about, well, I'll read you some of the different headlines. The Sun.co.uk. It's over in the UK. Frankenstein doctor creates life. Frankenstein doc creates life. A scientist has created life in a pioneering laboratory experiment in which a bug was brought back from the dead. Very weird stuff. Talks about artificial microbes. Let's read some more headlines from the same doctor. Scientists accused of playing God after creating artificial life by making designer microbe from scratch, but could it wipe out humanity? When you start getting into this stuff, when you start realizing some of the stuff they're doing and some of the stuff they were talking about, that maybe our ancestors a few thousand years ago were trying to explain, but they couldn't explain it, because how do you explain something that scientific about creating something, creating artificial life or doing some type of cloning? How do you explain? How would you go back in time if you had a microwave 500 years ago? How would they explain that oven? Well, it's a microwave. Let's say you had a microwave that had its own power source. What's a magic oven? You know, they couldn't describe it based on their current technology. But you know, where they're going with this stuff is basically, you know, what that some of that different biblical type stuff was talking about, if they were talking about anything. It's what I've been told, but let's read some more of them. Artificial life breakthrough announced by scientists. And of course, the problem isn't the cells from those in the know. The problem is this other unknown variable consciousness that we've been talking about. Church warns cell scientists not to play God. And you can look up some of these. This is by Breitbart, and this is Associated Press. And it is, I guess it's considered extremely dangerous because there are so many unknowns in this. Any form of intelligence and any scientific acquisition must always be measured against the ethical dimension which has its heart, the true dignity of every person. Pretending to be God or parodying his power of creation is enormous risk and can plunge men into barbarity. In the wrong hands, today's development can lead tomorrow to a devastating leap in the dark. So I think it's a fine tune between scientific discovery and what are some of the elements that we're not quantifying in this stuff. And there's always something not quantified. But as of right now, let's go into... but that's another example of what I was talking to in the previous one, in number 42. That's one right in front of your face. This stuff is going on. How dangerous is it? I don't know the full extent. Some of it's probably positively benign, but others can be dangerous because there's unknown things, and this unknown factor is consciousness. What are you're putting artificial DNA in something? That DNA is going to vibrate at a particular frequency. It's going to pick up, you know, the little brain is going to act like a receiver and pull consciousness in this world. If all this stuff is true, if this is the direction it's going, what are you bringing in here? That's where it becomes dangerous. But in the next one, we're going to talk about this a little more with Avatar, the movie Avatar. And then I'll do some brief Q&A again from the people that proof follow the White Rabbit 42. There's an interesting concept they're putting out in our faces in many ways, actually, in this concept of consciousness. Something just came to my attention. It was from that movie Avatar. And in the movie Avatar, it's a movie about going over to... they're trying to invade this planet to get some kind of rare mineral called unobtainium. That's what the mineral's called. But the basic plot is that they separate this white rabbit, his body from his consciousness, his body from his soul. And they create a hybrid to hijack the tribe. And they send in this hybrid Navi, that's the name of the race, Navi, this big, tall, 9-foot-tall blue creature, kind of humanoid. It's called a sapient, but it's like humanoid, but blue. You know, it's different. It's a big blue rabbit. And they send in this hybrid with a human consciousness, and its ideal is to be a saboteur. Well, you could only imagine the weapons potential is if you could take a consciousness. In other words, take you sitting there, take you as a person, your whole entire consciousness, your soul, and put it into another creature to sabotage or to hijack something. Well, that's an interesting concept. And they did it by creating, in this hybrid, they created a genetic, a little DNA, they basically rearranged this DNA just enough to hold that human consciousness on some level. It was slightly different genetically. Now imagine if he could breed, and as long as he bred and had little artificial Navi, well, sooner or later you got yourself a whole big parasitic element growing on the Navi. And that parasite would be not based on necessarily genetics, but a little itty-bitty flaw in the DNA that allowed that Navi, or that something that looked like a Navi, but wasn't a Navi, to hold a human consciousness, to hold another consciousness. It's an interesting concept. And this just came to my attention on because I've been talking about this concept of consciousness, that we exist versus a consciousness. And they keep on talking about this and plugging it down different avenues, but this was an avenue that was very provocative. And I haven't seen all of Avatar, but I did see one that segment when they're doing this hybrid. They grew, basically, through cloning and whatnot, a hybrid avatar. It's called an avatar. And it was a hybrid, you know, a 10-foot-tall Navi, this creature they're going to take over the planet. So they send in this avatar, they send in this hybrid with a human consciousness to basically sabotage. Interesting concept. But the hijacking happened on a genetic level, and it happened vis-a-vis consciousness. There's always been an argument among the racialist element, and there's an argument now even among the conspiracy rabbits. You know, in regards to the Jew rabbits, do they exist as a race, or is it just a mindset? Well, they may be both wrong. You know, the smarter of the conspiracy rabbits that have read, I call them that, they're not really I wouldn't call them conspiracy rabbits, that's probably not a nice name to call them, but they read the rents.coms, which are the biggest websites in the world. And that's what I call them, so it's not meant as an insult at all. It's just one big group, and they're a very, very big group. They're reading all about the Jew rabbits. And that is an old argument. Is it a race, or what is it? It may be neither. It may be both. Imagine, if you will, if you had a little slice of DNA. We're 66% the same as a fruit fly on genetic levels. The human species is less than 2%. We are basically very similar to chimpanzees. We are very similar to an Indian rabbit. An indigenous red rabbit of North America is very similar to a black rabbit of Africa, but it's different. The difference happens on a DNA level. One little twist of that DNA, and it can hold another consciousness. It's not holding that consciousness anymore. So it's a fascinating topic. It's a topic they're putting in front of your faces time and time again, and that's what the media does. The media is there to tell you what has been, what is going on now, and what will be going on in the future. And anytime you have a concept, what they're going to do is plan it and come back to it over and over again. And this concept of a consciousness, you know, it's like in the Harry Potter movies. You got the ghost running around there. Well, that's their consciousness. They're running. They don't have a body, but they're running around and they're having all the fun, in my opinion. The ghosts on Harry Potter. But this concept is coming at you time and time again, and that's what the media is there for. If you want to advertise a brand, there's a whole section of advertising that gets particular brands, tries to get them into particular movies. Because if you can get something into a movie, well, you can do quite well with it. So if you got Coca-Cola and you want to have that actor in that movie holding Coca-Cola or Budweiser, well, it's a great way to advertise. You put it out there and you come back to the meme over and over again. You put the product out there and you come back to the image over and over again and work it into the consciousness of the public. Many people that would be affected by something like Horus Avengers Follow the White Rabbit or the Mantra will never know they've been affected. Many of you, before you woke up to the type of programming that was going on in the media, never realized you were affected by the programming in the media. It's insidious. That's how this stuff works. But they're putting this concept of consciousness out there, and I just wonder how far it goes. You know, and I'll go forward and answer a few other questions, but that came to my attention, and they wanted me to comment on it. Someone that's proofed 42 went kind of out there. Nazi Never Never Land. Everything's out there in Nazi Never Never Land. But when you're dealing with consciousness, you're dealing with another component of race that I've been told is the iceberg. What we know about race is the tip of the iceberg. What's underneath the water, that big chunk of ice that we can't see, is consciousness. And that's everything. And so there could be more to this than meets the eye. Many of the conspiracy rabbits, as I call them, talk about the Jew rabbits being a race within a race. Some of the more intelligent ones have talked about they're a race within the race. Some of them that are very up to date on the Babylonian text, that they're a race within a race. They're a group, but within that group, there's particular bloodlines, and that's the only thing that matters. And they use all the others. They use all the others as a front. It's a front. Well, it's a front that's there to do one thing, and that's to take abuse because they always get hammered. But yet they always survive in some fashion. And of course, the smart Jordan Maxwells would say that from the other side. Jordan Maxwell is an alternative researcher. It came to my attention. He's been watched by the government. He talks about religion. I don't agree with everything he says, but, you know, I agree with his right to say whatever he wants to say. He talks about that these are groups within groups, and that the white rabbit side has certain bloodlines within it too, that are related to of groups within a group, or race within a race. This is a concept. And he talks about these type of things. But of course, the Jew rabbits are our front group that are at the front of everything when it comes to, let's say, Anglo-America. They're at the top and the front and out in your face when it comes to anything and everything. But the whole truth behind race will probably lie somewhere with this consciousness. And one little twist of DNA, and you can't hold that consciousness, well, if it goes that route, well, white rabbit isn't a white rabbit because of body. It's that way because of soul. Black rabbit isn't a black rabbit because of body. It's that way because of a consciousness or a soul. It's fascinating because that doesn't die. Yeah, the body is a bioorganism, like in the movie Avatar. The body doesn't mean anything, it's the consciousness. And they weren't hijacking it with the body, they were hijacking it with the consciousness. And the consciousness was very much real, very much quantifiable. Fascinating subject matter. I look forward to getting into more science behind it, but that is why you would not want to mix or match anything, because you're fooling with DNA. And there's going to be more to it than this little 0.2%. You know, the difference between the human species of 0.2%, that's going to mean a whole lot. If we're 66% the same as a fruit fly, heavens only knows what's in that 0.2%, whatever it is. It's huge. And it has to do with this unknown variable right now, and this is consciousness or soul. But I don't see anything bad in it for the racialist. It's probably the big, from what I've heard, it is. It's the big, it's the iceberg. It's the iceberg you don't see underneath the water. It's huge. It's a tidal wave. It's the difference in the human species. That little strand of DNA that can hold the soul or the consciousness. Interesting. Interesting subject matter. But that's what I have to say about Avatar to answer that person's question. There may be more truth to this type of thing than we can currently comprehend. But science will deliver the goods on it, and it'll probably be sooner rather than later. They're putting this topic of consciousness out there as well as this topic of a ghost. You know, I've never seen a ghost, but if consciousness can survive, well, there you go. Some of the proofers thought you might be confused by what I mean by Age of Pisces. Age of Pisces is simply the end of an astrological age. Pisces, the symbol is the two fishes. It's a water sign. And that is the age of Christianity. That, you know, an astrological age lasts like 22,000, 2,100 years. And so when I talk about Pisces being reconciled, all this stuff and this fighting with Christianity over Christianity, I would expect it to be reconciled with the real deal if it's going to go that route. In other words, if God exists, well, he's going to send this character out to reconcile it. And if it goes that wild, if it goes the Nazi Never Never Land direction, if it goes out in the area they went, I would expect to see something that crazy. But astrological age is simply a time period in astrology, and there are 12 astrological ages, and we'll be at the end of a complete procession of something called a great year, which is 26,000 years or 25,920, depending on who's doing the figuring. And there's, of course, heavy arguments over when one begins and when one ends. We're going into next, the age of Aquarius. And some say it's already started. Others say we're just feeling effects from it. Others say it won't be starting for 300 years. You get the picture. But you can look up astrological age, and that's all the age of Pisces is an astrological age. And it's the precession of the equinoxes is a phenomenon that is... Well, there's a lot to it. It's beyond the scope of this show, but you feel free to wiki astrological age and do some homework. But Aquarius is an air sign. And since I'll end it right there talking about the famous air sign Aquarius, because I'll go off the air on that. How about that? And the age of Aquarius, of course, would last another 2,2100 years. And then we'll go into another age, and it's an endless procession of the equinoxes. And I was also asked to comment on the Aztec calendar ended in 1997, and if there's a coincidence with that and that big comet event in 1998. Well, I don't know. I have no idea. I was throwing my hat in the ring in regards to speculation. Since everyone's asking me to speculate on if they did what they, you know, this area that they went into, what I would be looking to see if it goes something that beyond the normal razzle-dazzle that I expect. And I expect to see, you know, Pisces reconciled. But the Aztec calendar ended in 1997, and of course you have all these different civilizations in South America all set up by one party, and that's the winning side of the pantheon, or God's side. And it's really hard to say if 1998, anything about that, what was called the shot across the bow, the big comet event, the first one they've seen. There's been others since then, apparently. But that was one of the most significant ones in 1998. If there's a connection, I have no idea. Could be. Could be. We'll know soon enough. But in the next... in the next follow, White Rabbit, I'm going to do a funny movie special. We're going to talk about some movies. What you see is what you get, racism in the movies, and wide sky racism in the movies. And some racial stuff that went underneath the rug. Some funny, some not so. And I'll talk about some movies, some stuff about it. We'll do a special on the movies. And I'll be back with you in the next follow, the White Rabbit. We are now at the end of another episode of Horace the Avengers Follow the White Rabbit. And this podcast is, of course, all, as always, dedicated to practical politics. But I'd like to take this time to thank you for tuning in to another episode. On behalf of the indigenous white rabbits of Europe, it is yours truly, Horace the Avenger. And I'll be back with you in another episode in the near future. Until then, thank you for listening.